When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 31. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhline in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
Going fine. Now,
just
the power's been restored.
Just
now the power's been restored. Yes. Anyway, all right. A couple of things in the fact check this week, or one thing in the fact check this week. We were talking about strange things that people have done with shows and secret tracks and stuff like that. And I was listening to Under the Influence podcast, and they were talking about how Wayne's World did a bunch of Garth and Wayne came back and did Super Bowl commercials, right? Mm. And leading up to it, they talked about, you know, the really enormous bowl, the giant bowl. They couldn't, for some reason, they couldn't say Super Bowl. And then they did a bunch of Super Bowl ads about getting Uber Eats delivered and that kind of stuff. And then the thing I wanted to point out is they had a over 2.5 hour reel on YouTube of them watching the listings of every restaurant that Uber Eats provides service for.
Oh, wow.
So the two of them just sitting there watching the things go by for two, and then Alice Cooper even comes in the middle and joins them, and yeah.
Nice.
So it was kind of a funny sort of weird, you know, media blitz thing. So, but I guess you could watch it live. I don't know.
Well, I remember the campaign that they did where they were doing an Uber Eats campaign.
Yeah. It was a couple of years ago, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
That was cool. Anyway, and let's move over to the headlines, and Jonathan, you're up.
Yeah, a really good piece to lead us off on Variety this week, talking about the sort of behind-the-scenes stuff that's going on at Marvel Studios, so home of your favorite shows like Loki, which we'll be talking about later in this episode. And it's an article by Tatiana Siegel that really gets deep into, you know, everything that sort of happened post Avengers Endgame, you know, what a lot of people have considered to be sort of the weakest chunk of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, TV stuff, movie stuff, with a few exceptions in there. They do make a point in there that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was a success. They also point out the irony that the person who made that is now running DC Studios. But it's a pretty amazing piece, sort of digging into all these sort of behind the scenes things. It's talking about Jonathan Majors, who, of course, is playing Victor Timely in this season of Loki, played He Who Remains in the last one, played Kang in Ant-Man Quantumania, and is supposed to be sort of the central bad guy. And the fact that he's facing domestic assault allegations, and what that's done to change all these plans for, you know, they may have to pivot, they may have to recast, and talking about, you know, the decision to pump out so much content during the pandemic that they were burning out all their VFX VFX studios to the point where they have now all sort of drawn the line in the sand, and all the VFX artists have all unionized, and that's an unprecedented thing. So it's a really deep dive into just where we're at and how we got there for the MCU. And it does even mention in there that The Marvels, which is the next movie, it's coming out, I believe, next week, saying that it's, you know, it's been plagued with problems. They had to try and figure out how to bring all these stories together and how they're not anticipating it's going to do very well. And yeah, it's really interesting look at how we went from this sort of can do no wrong era from 2009 to 2019. And now we're in the can do no right era of Marvel, where people, you know, they set such a high bar. And it even mentions in here that there's been some discussion of trying to find a way to bring back the original six Avengers for a film, just because the fans would respond so well to that. So yeah, really, really interesting piece. I highly recommend. We'll have it in our show notes. Give it a look. But really digs into some real problems and some real issues. Apparently, one of the things I found really interesting was the She-Hulk series, which I think we all sort of enjoyed, but didn't, you know, blow socks off our feet. Apparently, cost more money per episode than Game of Thrones.
Wow,
$25 million per episode.
Just because of the FX.
Yep.
The effect.
Yep.
Wow.
So
yeah, they had a lot of She-Hulk. Like, you know, if they went like an entire episode without her turning into She-Hulk, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like if you count up, you know, Bruce Banner as Hulk, it's not that long. It's like 5 minutes of VFX or something, you know, just creatively spread out. Whereas this one, she was purposely a big part of the show as the She-Hulk. So, I can see why it would cost a lot. I had no idea it would cost that much.
Yeah. And it's not all doom and gloom. It does this, you know, I'm not going to spoil the ending of an article, but it does point out that, you know, while things have not been as, you know, stellar as I think everyone has hoped from the Marvel side, they do have Deadpool 3, which is going to be the first one in the MCU. It's going to bring back Hugh Jackman. A lot of people are looking forward to that. They now have acquired all the rights to Fantastic Four, X-Men, and all that, which I think a lot of people are looking forward to the reboot of that. And, you know, there are lots of things that they can play with that can get them back on top. But it's just interesting that it was such a huge long run of success. You know, one of the things that's mentioned in here is the fact that, you know, when you saw that red block Marvel logo crawl across your screen on a movie, you knew you were getting a quality product, and that has been kind of diminished. And I thought that was pretty fair.
Yeah. For me, I feel like, you know, for one thing, they actually, even though it's an unfortunate situation with Majors, like it at least is a character that's fairly easy to recast because of the whole multiverse thing. Oh, he looks totally different. He looks like Don Cheadle in this one, you know, like You do that sort of thing. The other stuff kind of feels like a bit of an unforced error. So you did mention the VFX folks who were overworked, but it was made even worse because they would like arbitrarily change stuff.
Yep.
Right. Like, oh, well, this one's going to be earlier. It's like, well, dude, we haven't even started on that one yet. Like we're halfway through this one. Like this one needs to ship, should have been the answer, right? Find a way thematically for it to ship.
Yeah.
And I also agree that they got a little too far into the, oh, you had to keep up with every single property to know what's going on. And I think I prefer it as you enjoy it more the more you've been following along. But it's still independently understandable without having to have that. So the article talking about like, yeah, who's going to know the Marvels? Like, yeah, Captain Marvel's literally the only one that anybody's going to know. Nobody's going to know Rambo. Nobody's going to know Ms. Marvel. Like, unless you're super deep into it. I'm talking like average person on the street, right?
Yeah.
And so they really just need to come back to the basics and not do, I really don't think they should do let's bring back the original Avengers. Like, no, that's a DC thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They panic and scramble, like stick to what you do. Just get back to what you do best. You got a little far astray off of the pattern that you had established in the first early phases.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this is hubris. You know, I wonder how much of it was just the thought that they, coming off of just an absolute, you know, run of all time. And we're talking about, you know, movie history. Like, very few things have ever been successful for as long as the MCU's run of, you know, 11 years of just cranking out hits after hit after hit, after making billions and billions and billions of dollars. I wonder how much of it was just the thought that, you know, we can do anything we want and people will follow along. Oh, we'll make an Ant-Man movie and that'll be a hit. We can make anything. Oh, we can make Guardians of the Galaxy movie and people will watch that. We can make anything. And then now people are like, stop scraping so much of the barrel, please. Give us more of the characters we like, the actors we like.
I turned a bunny and a twig into stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did the same thing with a talking raccoon and a talking tree, right? So, I mean, going into that, not knowing anything about those, I kind of thought, what is up with that?
Yeah. No, I remember talking to you, Tim, about when they were going into phase two and they had announced, you know, some of the stuff that they were going to do and they were going to roll out. Yeah. Ant-Man and Guardians. And you were just like, the what now? And thinking like, even I thought like, oof, they're pushing their luck here a little bit. And, you know, if you told me then that they were going to do, you know, Shang-Chi and the Eternals and, you know, some of the sort of bigger swings that they've taken, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. But, you know, and to be fair, some of those worked. I thought Shang-Chi was a pretty tight movie. It was a little heavy on the VFX, but I thought Simu Liu was great. And, you know, but then I thought Eternals was pretty terrible. So, you know, you just never know, right?
Yep.
But speaking of the MCU, we got news today that we got our first look at the Echo trailer. So this is the spinoff from the Hawkeye Disney Plus series. So this is the character who is, she's an indigenous American, and she also is, she is deaf, and she is missing one of her legs. And this is true of both the character and the actress. And we weren't sure what was going to come as far as timing of this. Initially, I think it was supposed to come out end of this year. We weren't sure when we're going to get the timing on this. So they dropped the first trailer, which is, you know, pretty heavy on the action. We get some Kingpin in there. So we get Vincent D'Onofrio back playing, of course, the Kingpin. If you blink and you miss it, I don't blame you, but we did see Daredevil in the Netflix black and red suit in one scene fighting. So that's interesting, but most interesting is the fact that all the episodes are dropping simultaneously on January the 10th. Now, Jaime will explain why in a minute, but it's pretty interesting given the delivery method that we have seen on Disney Plus of dropping things 1 week at a time. But this isn't strictly speaking just a Disney Plus show, right, Jaime?
Yeah, so the next article we've got here ties right into it. In a first, I'm just going to read the title here from The Verge. In a first, Marvel's Echo is coming to both Disney Plus and Hulu at the same time. So I'm going to assume that's largely only for Americans and a handful of other countries that have that weird split between Hulu and Disney Plus. I know you all have your Disney Plus content is inclusive, like Star or something like that, right?
Yeah. You just have to make sure you turn your settings to MA so that you can see the mature content.
Okay. And it's weird because it's like not only all out at the same time, simultaneously, I don't think they said how many episodes, but all episodes available on January 10th, simultaneously on Disney Plus and Hulu. They will be available on Hulu until April 9th, and then presumably just continue to be available on Disney Plus. So it feels like a bit of a consequence of, I'm just going to bleed into the next one because it's all kind of related. So Disney is about to own all of Hulu because they're about to acquire the remaining $8 billion stake from Comcast. So folks are saying like, well, maybe this is a move to be like, hey, let's try combining these two resources over time. And it ends up being like a nice little sneak preview of like, hey, do you subscribe to Hulu? Maybe you might want to try the Disney bundle kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they decide to move forward. That obviously we sort of get the amalgamated version up here, although some of the content that is Hulu first in the States comes later for us. We talked about How I Met Your Father and some other products, although Futurama, which re-debuted on Hulu, came same time as it did here in Canada, as it did in the United States. So it'll be interesting to see how they decide to sort of use that power of those two things. Or I wonder if they amalgamate down the road. just this is their way of saying, well, you like all this content, now it's all over here, and by the way, it costs more.
Yeah. For the trailer itself, I found it kind of interesting that it starts out in sort of a, you know, you should probably be Team Kingpin for this one, right? Like you see a little Echo getting not treated too well, and Mr. Kingpin going and just learning that guy a lesson or two.
Yeah, a pretty bloody lesson, yeah. That was the part that struck me, was just it seemed Netflix level violent compared to what we've primarily seen on the MCU on Disney Plus. But yeah, it was definitely seemed a little more mature and a little darker than maybe we've seen so far, although they've certainly have gone there a little bit in some of these Disney Plus shows.
So have we talked about this Disney and Hulu thing, or?
Yeah, that's all sort of mixed. These three stories are sort of all mixed together, right? They're all kind of the same thing. I just looked it up. It's 5 episodes, so they're dropping 5 at once on January 10th.
Oh, okay. There we go.
So it's not, I mean, obviously you don't know what that means for runtime, if they're an hour apiece, if they're 45 minutes, if they're 35 minutes. But yeah, that's still, it's an interesting delivery method. It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know how you both feel, but I really enjoy the week by week, just because obviously it gives us content, but it also means that we can pace ourselves out. You don't feel like, I always thought like the Netflix delivery method of dropping everything at once was very challenging, especially when it's something like 14 or 16 episodes where you're like, damn, how am I going to watch all these before everybody spoils everything?
Right. And you're going to talk about the Indianapolis 500 coming to Disney Plus?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, since we're talking about Disney Plus, a little tidbit dropped as soon as we crossed the calendar into November. They announced that we are one short month away from Indiana Jones and the Dial of Desiccation. No, what is it? Dial of Destiny is coming to...
Dial of Depends.
Dial of Depends is coming to Disney Plus on December 1st. You know, I'm not super surprised. I actually was thinking the other day, it's funny, I haven't seen any announcements about that, and logically, obviously, that's where it's going to debut. I was thinking about that when we talked on our last episode about the fact that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is coming to Netflix soon, that we're going to start seeing those summer movies start cracking into some of the streaming services. And of course, that means, you know, inevitably we'll see someone near Christmas time will probably land Barbie, and someone will land Oppenheimer, and there'll be this sort of run of, you know, the summer big movies that'll start trickling out. But Tim, I know you went and saw it in the theater. I don't know if you saw it. I don't think you did.
No, I've been waiting for this one to come out, and I think based on stuff that came out from Netflix, I think just this week during Halloween is when Spider-Man came out on that service. I've not seen either one, so I was waiting for that one to come out as well.
Yeah, we always talk about how you vote with your dollars. You know, I didn't feel strongly enough, even though I'm a lifelong Indiana Jones and Harrison Ford fan. I just did not feel like this was a big enough sell for me to go see it in the theater. Tim, I know for you it was. You know, same with Barbie. You know, I'm very curious to see this movie. It was a very big cultural touchstone this year, and obviously got a lot of good reviews, and I like the director and I like the performers, and I'm totally going to watch it. I just didn't really feel the need to go and, you know, dress up and go see it in the theater. So yeah, I'm glad that this stuff is starting to trickle out, and looking forward to watching, you know, Indiana Jones on his last adventure. Just didn't really feel like I needed to flop down, you know, $50 and popcorn and tickets, sure, and everything else, yeah, to do so.
Yeah. I mean, I go see movies because it's a thing to do, right? So, you know, kind of quiet here sometimes. So, I mean, I did enjoy it. I don't think it was a horror. I didn't regret seeing it. So it was better to me, it was better than Mission Impossible, which I guess is not a stretch for you, but.
Shocker.
But it was, I know. It was one of the more memorable. I mean, you know, it was, he's a memorable character. It's kind of interesting to see what they could do with him, you know, and his walker and, you know, his shawl and everything like that. Yeah, it was good. All right. And speaking of movies, we were also talking last week. This is kind of a follow-up story. It's not so much about The Killers of the Flower Moon, which is the latest Scorsese film, from which I've heard, I heard somebody say it's not his best film. So in spite of the fact that it's got all the you know, big names in it, what's interesting from our point of view is we were talking about the length of movies and how These movies don't have, we were talking about, what was it, Ridley Scott's Napoleon a couple of weeks ago, right? And it's going to be like a 4 hour or close to, or 2.5 hour epic, but 4 hour on Apple TV thing. And it's getting ridiculous in terms of like how long you're expected to sit in your seat. And I'm not the type of person who can get up in the middle of a movie and go to the bathroom. I just don't want to do that, right? But some European theaters have been planning a 6 minute intermission in the middle of the film. And of course, Paramount is, you know, saying, you know, cracking down on them for doing that. The only exception is in the IMAX movies, they don't do that. But so interesting that in spite of the way the film is being presented and delivered, a lot of theaters are deciding, screw that, we're going to put an intermission. You know, like I said, it also gives them an opportunity to sell more popcorn and pops and stuff, right? So that's all about that story.
Yeah, I totally can understand the, like, well, you know, it's in your contract that you're not supposed to be doing this. So always follow the contract. But that said, it also feels kind of silly that that's the way it is in the contract. Certainly there's, you know, the intent of the artists, and you want to respect that as well. But, you know, when you're pushing that long, I'll just pick on the quote here. Where does it say? I want to make sure. There you go. This is supposedly a quote from Scorsese. You know, people say it's 3 hours, but come on, you can sit in front of the TV and watch something for 5 hours. It is irresponsible for somebody, whoever it was that got that quote, to not just turn right back around and say, absolutely nobody sits there and stays exactly there for 5 hours.
No.
Right? They go and pee because they pause the TV, or yeah, they go during a commercial, or when it's, oh, look, it's the credits and then the intro song for the next episode. Like, that's when you go and pee. So movies don't really have that, although there is, you know, sites where you can go. And I'll just tell you right now, apparently this Killers movie has lots of funerals. So apparently you should go pee every time there's a funeral. Those are your chances. Your spoiler-free chances. I feel like, you know, a movie that's called Killers, you should expect to be multiple deaths. So,
right. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, like, you're watching TV, you're watching a movie, whatever, you pause it to answer that text or that Facebook post or whatever that, you know, interrupted your moment, you know? In the theater, you, generally speaking, people don't have respect and don't have their phones out, but when you're at home, you're at home. The dog comes over, the kids want to ask a question, you know, you reach for the pause button, right? So,
yeah.
That's the way it goes. Anyway.
I also feel like intermissions would be an interesting thing to bring back for, you know, the fairness to the box office folks, the theaters themselves, who predominantly make their money on concessions. So why not give people an opportunity to relieve themselves of the mega giant gulp or whatever it is they had and go purchase a fresh one with some more popcorn. Yeah. Next one here is In Memoriam. It is entitled The Microsoft Windows 95 Video Guide with Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry. So the sort of the hidden item here is the fact that Matthew Perry passed away at a very young, what was he, 54?
54.
Yeah. Bananas.
Yeah. Really, really sad. And clearly had a really troubled time all the way back through his career, which, you know, you kind of hope people like that will find their peace. And it's sad that that peace in this case comes with his death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it felt like it was an interesting time. This came up on the algorithm. This is an old school Windows 95. What are computers? Help me understand how to use this product. Full of that era's 90s cheese, but with a surprising amount of heart of gold from Jennifer Aniston and Matthew Perry, especially Perry's quips around things like the start menu or the taskbar.
Could it be any harder to use?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's... It's like an hour long, but it feels like only like the first half hour is the sort of
the sitcom part. Yeah.
Yeah. The sitcom part. The other half is just straight up. This is what you would see in a corporate training video. So,
yeah. Well, these are the kind of things that we used to get with our software back in the day. You would get like this VHS that would come with it and you could pop it in and watch it. And that's how, you know, I mean, YouTube basically has replaced all that with people having, you know, how to videos and stuff like that. But this is pretty common to either, like, even an audio cassette sometimes you would get telling you how to, you know, work through the menus and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that they use some big name people. Windows 95 was an interesting launch for Microsoft. They got the Rolling Stones to write a tune for it. They got Brian Eno to write the start sound for it, you know, and then of course they got people like this. They put a lot of money and effort into making sure that people really got the best value for their buck with Windows 95, even though it was a dog, you know. But yeah, like I've talked about before many times, that the market share of Windows has always been way higher than any other platform. They put a lot of effort into it. You know, explaining how expanding menus, I mean, every stuff that people do now without even thinking about it, right? Or in fact, we don't even do that stuff anymore. It's so hard to use, but yeah, you know, it's interesting. And don't push the big red button, you know, whatever you do.
A thing you should definitely not do is misuse an actor's likeness and voice in your ad. Even if you're an AI-generated app developer, you put Scarlett Johansson in your ad and try to throw in a cheap little disclaimer of like, oh, this isn't actually her, this is just generated. It's like, no, that doesn't pass the muster, buddy. You're definitely liable for some coin there. So this is about her lawsuit against an app developer that did that very thing.
Yeah, I wonder if this is a tip of the iceberg story.
Well, it is. I mean, I was watching Buffalo News yesterday. I think ABC or whatever. Somebody in New Jersey, some high school kids in New Jersey, took all their classmates, like female classmate pictures, and generated nudes of them and distributed them amongst each other. And technically that's child pornography, right? Because, you know, if you're in possession of it, you're in possession of child pornography. And the fact that, you know, the subject matter were young girls, right? So yeah, I mean, like that's just, you're right. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oof.
Yeah. Keep going, homie.
Well, I don't know how to transition into the kittens segment after that. I wasn't expecting that transition, but I'm going to call it happier news. So if you are on the ad tier version of Netflix, they are saying here that in the first quarter of 2024, quote, after watching three consecutive episodes, members will be presented with a fourth episode ad free. So, you know, that's an interesting trait. It certainly helps people binge. It certainly helps them get a little bit of a breather. I've not seen anybody personally using the Netflix ad tier, so I don't know if it's 30 seconds here. So for whatever reason, right, all of these streaming services tend to have the like tiniest catalog of ads to show. And you would think, whoa, is that a bad problem? It's like, well, imagine if you saw the same ad like three times in a row and you say, you know what, maybe they should just put dead air because now I've gone from ignoring this product to vaguely noticing the product, and I've looped all the way around over into actively hating this product, which I feel like defeats the purpose of advertising. I don't know why it's that way in the streaming world. I assume there must be monetary differences. If you watch traditional sequential media on like broadcast television or cable television, you don't run into this problem. Yes, you will see common ads, but you're not going to see literally the same ad three times in a row in an ad break. So hopefully Netflix's version is better. And if nothing else, at least you'll get a breather every fourth episode.
All right. Got some quick ones for some TV stuff. News today that or this week that CW's Superman and Lois series will be ending with its upcoming fourth season. They had already cut it back down the content. They were going to do only 10 episodes starting next year, like obviously just in the new year. But they have decided that this is it. So not an unsurprising move, or not a surprising move, I should say. It seemed like the writing was on the wall for the DC stuff that is out there. And so I guess I'm not super surprised that it's ended. I didn't watch very much past the first season. I don't know if either of you have kept up with it. But feelings, thoughts on this one coming to an end?
Yeah, I think I watched the first two seasons, maybe. And then, yeah, just got lost interest.
Yeah,
I've liked it. I've not loved it, so it's not not a terrible thing for it to be ending. I do think they're sort of almost sort of speed running a bit in the like let's get every named character in a relationship kind of mode.
Yeah.
So maybe it's about time to, you know, when you hit that area of your life cycle, it's about time to end it. And as I've said before, like, I'm weirdly less interested in the Superman punching something, you know, like Monster of the Week or the overarching bad guy or gal. And I'm really way more interested in, like, yeah, Superman can't punch taxes, can he? How is he going to do this? He is not Bruce Wayne. He can't just money his way out of this stuff. So, you know, if they ever do this sort of take again of, like, an established later in his career, family-driven Superman, I would like to see, ironically, a little bit less Supermaning and a little bit more of, like, yeah, how does a person who happens to be a superhero deal with these things?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, as I say, it seemed like the writing was on the wall for the stuff that was happening on CW. We've already seen the end of so many series, obviously, you know, things like Green Arrow and Flash and Supergirl and some of the short-lived series, Batwoman and things like that. But yeah, it seemed like this one was kind of the last standard bearer, and it seems like they want to move a lot of that content over to Max, and they want to move over a lot of that content into the reboot that's happening with James Gunn and his team in charge. So yeah, I'm not super surprised this is ending, and it's, you know, to all good things, right? Next up, we got some news. Speaking of Max and HBO, we got some news about some of the shows that I think we're kind of looking forward to and when we might be able to see them. So we got news that the House of the Dragon, which was a pretty popular series when the first season came out, the second season is expected to air in early summer 2024, according to Casey Bloys, the boss over there at HBO. And they sort of went through the list of things that people are interested in. Didn't really give us a lot of other stuff that's coming next year from them, but really kind of teased ahead some of the stuff that they're working on. And it looks like 2025 is going to be another real big boom of content over there. They're working on production of the next season of Last of Us is going to be next year, likely coming in 2025 for that. They've greenlit another Game of Thrones prequel called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, which is based on the Dunk and Egg novellas that George R.R. Martin wrote. It's supposed to be based on Sir Duncan the Tall and Egg, who is the future king Aegon the Fifth, Targaryen, and their sort of adventures through the wilds of the Seven Kingdoms. They also announced, you know, for some of the other big shows, White Lotus is coming in 2025. Welcome to Derry, which is the It prequel, is going to come in 2025. So seems like they're kind of loading up for 2025. Not surprising. I mean, we knew that there was going to be a knock-on from the writer's strike and the continuing strike for actors that was going to probably lead to a bit of a dearth in 2024. But at least we have the next season of House of the Dragon to look forward to. Although they did point out that the first season was 10 episodes and the second season is slated to be only 8. So
interesting choice there.
Yeah. And the last thing was just the Futurama series that we were talking about earlier on Hulu has gotten renewed for 2 additional seasons. So we will be seeing more from Bender and Fry and Leela and the gang. Yeah. Good news.
Yeah. So good news, everybody.
Good news. Apparently, when they did the revival, it was brought back for 2 seasons. This is an additional 2 seasons, or a total of 4. Did I read that right from the article?
Yep, I think you're absolutely right. And and that's obviously, you know, that's not necessarily being like, and then we'll be done. That's just what they've contracted all the performers and writers and everybody for.
Right. Well, that brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related. And this week it is Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 10, Old Friends, New Planet.
The ultimate, the finale
of the season finale. 4. Yes, it's over. Okay, so pitch it.
Jaime, you can go first because I got to pop a Halls. Hang on.
I put in this fourth season of Lower Decks comes to an explosive, earth-shattering finale starring Nick Locarno.
Yeah, given the very, very overt references to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, I went with Welcome to Star Trek II Redux, The Wrath of Locarno.
Wrath of Locarno, yeah, good. Where I was going to say Wesley Crusher rides again.
That's a good one.
All right. Yeah, interesting one. Interesting episode.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the whole season was built around this, you know, the mystery of who was destroying all these ships, which turned out to be who is stealing all these ships, which turned out to be, oh, actually, it was the lower deckers from all these different alien races working with Nick Locarno, of course, which is a deep cut from the TNG series. And then tying that into Mariner's sort of origin story for why she's such a hard butt to want to be staying as the ensign all this time, even though she's clearly, you know, older and experienced and probably should be further along in her career. So, yeah, I thought that this, as a conclusion to all that sort of buildup, was not bad. Actually, I kind of enjoyed this. This was, you know, very pew 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 for a Lower Decks episode. Lots of action, lots of yelling, but also still didn't skimp on the humor and the heart and all the things we've come to expect from it. So, yeah, yeah. Not a bad way to end a fourth season.
Yeah. There's one little quick joke in there too, between Rutherford and Boimler, that they were talking, like, I felt like going back and rewinding, but I didn't take the time to do it. And that was when were they talking about the fact that Tom Paris and Nick Locarno looked the same?
Yes. I have that in the quotes. I have all those quotes in the quotes. Yeah.
All right, cool.
What did you guys have for your pew 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 for this one?
I think for me, the Mariner being chased by Nova Fleet had some good pew pew pews, some pretty good different tropes in there, right? Around the, you know, being chased by other ships, impenetrable barrier, having to go hide in the, there's a lot of debris field, having to go hide in the, I think it's an ion storm in this case, but it looks like a nebula, you know, like there's all sorts of fun stuff there. Critically, with Mariner never, as a member of Starfleet, never taking a shot at any of the Nova Fleet folks.
Yeah, and that's a pretty important one, because that was obviously one of the things the Admiral says at the beginning is, you know, you can't fire a shot at them.
Right.
That scene was, for me, the most memorable, because she steals the Ferengi Genesis device and straps it into the seat next to her and calls it the first officer. And, and it actually starts referring to it as GD, which made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, for sure. I like the using the big useless Orion ship as a battering ram.
Yeah, that's what I had too. Is that moment where we get our first glimpse of Boimler in the captain's seat, and it's because Freeman is in the captain's yacht, and they're using the giant Orion ship. They realize it's never going to fly, but they still found a purpose for it. So
yeah. And also the Boimler says the first time you ever see a captain's yacht in flight, right?
Yeah. Fun episode for Easter eggs. Obviously, there was a ton of references to Star Trek II, the part where she's hiding in the atmosphere of the planet and Locarno is chasing her. Obviously, very much of the Khan and Kirk playing cat and mouse inside the nebula from there. There was a ton of the music cues. When the Genesis device goes off, we see obviously the very much the same echo of the blast rings coming out. There were so many little moments there that were very homage to Star Trek II in there.
But my first Easter egg was the gardener dude. I forgot his name now.
Boothby. Yeah, I had that out in there. Yeah. You sort of catch a glimpse. They don't make it overt, but it's clearly supposed to be that, right?
Yeah. And then did Wrath of Khan start at Starfleet in San Francisco?
No, it starts with Kirstie Alley in the Kobayashi Maru.
Oh, right. Okay. Which is at, or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. It's at Starfleet Academy. You're right.
Yeah, so I mean, my other Easter eggs obviously I had was the Nova Squadron.
Yep. Including Wesley.
Unnamed, yeah, and Wesley Crusher, he was another one. And Cito.
Yep. Right? Yep.
And then they were talking about the Starburst maneuver, and he had it on his little iPad as well.
Yep.
And did they name the dude? I think he had a speaking line at the very beginning. The
Josh. Josh was the one that dies.
Yeah, yeah. So he was in there too, but.
Yeah. And
pretty much.
It also, I don't know if this one occurred to you guys, but when they did the recap for the season at the beginning, they sort of showed all the stuff that led up to sort of set the table for this episode. And then we heard Jonathan Frakes say, and now the conclusion, which is exactly what happened in the original two-parter in TNG, right? When we had the Borg, right? The episode where Locutus first shows up. So that was kind of how they did the beginning of that episode with the exact same line. I don't know if they actually got him to re-record it or if it was actually the same one, but that made me laugh because there was no reason to have Frakes there other than the fact that it was funny.
Yeah. Well, since you got your quotes here, let's...
Yeah, so the one you referenced, Tim, so the exchange between Rutherford and Boimler is, Rutherford says, he looks like Tom Paris. And Boimler just glances it off and says, I don't see it. And then they do another couple of other lines, and then they come back, and Rutherford says, they have, like, the exact same face. They're identical. And Boimler says, no, I just don't see it. And, of course, referencing the fact that Robert Duncan McNeil played both parts and plays has played Tom Paris on Lower Decks and now has played Locarno on Lower Decks. So, it's, obviously, it's a joke on a joke on a joke, which is even funnier. So, yeah, that was pretty good. I referenced the Mariner choosing to steal the miniature Genesis device and make it her first officer. She says, you are my first officer. Yay, little buddy, no exploding. Right. That was funny. Locarno, when talking about, you know, well, if you don't like the way I run things, you can always go back to the Romulans. Romulans are famously forgiving, right?
Yeah.
Miglimo, when he gets into the fighting pit against the giant warrior Orion woman, Beth. Madam, please, perhaps we can settle this over a delicious bowl of slime. But the best line was Locarno's famous last words. They put a paywall on a bomb? Stupid Ferengi.
Yeah, boom.
Yeah. To turn it off, please insert two strips of gold-pressed platinum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other good quotes you had, Jaime?
I was amused by the Orion, I demand barter by combat.
That was pretty good. You're right. Yeah, I should have had that.
Yeah, there's always a way out of these situations, right?
Yeah, barter by combat. Well, and that brings us well into the big question that I had, which was, so as part of this, and we mentioned the giant Orion ship, we mentioned the trial by combat, the part of this episode was the fact that they had to go and engage the Orions to try and find a way to get their support. And in the end, what it costs is Tendi has to leave the Cerritos at the end of the episode and go home to rejoin the Orion Syndicate. And so my big question, obviously, this is the end of a season. We've seen this before. We saw Boimler leave and go off onto a different ship. We've seen different, you know, we saw Mariner leave. You know, where are we? So this is Tendi. So how long before we see Tendi back with the gang on the Cerritos? Or is Talin the new number four on this gang?
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And then Tendi's like, she was supposed to be the new queen or whatever, right? After her mom or whatever. But is that her sister that's on the throne?
Yeah, we saw her in a previous episode, the one earlier this season, where she goes and her sisters, they think that she's been ritually kidnapped as part of this wedding ceremony, and it turns out that she doesn't want to do that. And yeah, so we saw that whole sort of episode that gave us the backstory into Tendi's life a little bit. And here we get sort of the, you know, we've seen her wield her power as this, you know, very important person within the Syndicate before, even though she's doing it for Starfleet's behalf. And we see her do it here, but the price that she pays for that is much higher, where she basically says, you know, I'll do what you want and I'll come back and I'll be part of the family. And they're like, yeah, that's too good to pass up. So,
right.
Yeah. De'Erica, I think, is her sister.
Tendi 2. No can do, Tendi 2.
Yeah, that's right. No can do, Tendi 2. I also didn't mention the part where they get the Orion battleship and they're trying to figure out how to prioritize. And we have Livik versus Rutherford. Now, we've seen this rivalry between the two engineers play out in a previous episode. But when they decide that they, you know, we have to prioritize the engines. No, we have to prioritize the shields. No, we have to present that. And then Talin says, there's only one way to settle this. And the two of them end up in the holodeck. With the Twain compromise once again, again, I couldn't stop laughing. It was just so stupid and funny. It's just such a dumb premise, but it's so funny. All right. Well, all in. So this episode, wraps up season four. We talked all season long about this sort of, you know, there wasn't a huge, like each episode had a little tease, a little taste of this sort of larger Locarno building the Nova force, but we didn't overwhelm the season, but did kind of give us something to sort of tie it all together. How do you guys feel about the whole fourth season as one whole now?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. It wasn't like you said, it wasn't a huge, like, long narrative, season long narrative, but it did have sort of a, I guess it was meant to be like a glue that kind of combines all the episodes together, even though the actual stealing of the ships wasn't part of the plot, even the A or B or C plot, right? So, It was sometimes part of the cold opener and that. It was interesting. It was. I guess it's a good way to get people to stick with the whole season to find out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was anyway. A nice way to sort of keep a larger narrative moving without intruding on what they just want to do, which is make people laugh with Star Trek references, yeah. Right?
Well, and this show has a format of like 40 minutes and it's done, kind of, you know, the old original series format where I guess Next Generation did that too, where they would introduce a conflict and then they would have it resolved by the end of the episode kind of thing, right?
Although I will say, right. I was reflecting on that after I finished this, thinking, wow, I can't believe we've got 40 episodes of the series now. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's definitely become one of my very favorite Star Trek things that's ever existed. And I thought, yeah, it's interesting because we have seen actually some interesting character development, you know, yeah. not just obviously our core four, but, you know, we've seen some really interesting developments across a lot of other supporting characters and the sort of larger universe of Trek. And, you know, for a, you know, occasionally goofy, thoroughly irreverent, although not thoroughly irreverent, I guess it is pretty reverent, look at the Star Trek universe. It's come a long ways and it's really good. Yep. Harmony, what are your final thoughts?
I enjoyed the season. I don't know that it necessarily elevated the art or the series, but it's still a really, I think, solid performance. I don't think I was ever bored by any of the episodes. I feel like they're in a good rhythm here. I think there were some folks online that wanted maybe things to get more hype or something, but it feels like it was more about personal growth for the various characters. We see, you know, Mariner growing. We see some growth in Tendi and Rutherford, and even like just how sort of upset they were to be leaving each other, even if they don't want to state it to each other, they don't recognize it. You know, Boimler is showing that he's somebody who can be more than just a tryhard. I mean, he got to captain a ship for a while now and try to look all cool and do the right job of it. T'Lyn, of course, learning as a Vulcan and coming into Starfleet and not being totally dependent on what like the Vulcan High Command might think of her kind of thing. And I guess in kind of a literal level, like they still think of themselves as the lower deckers, but they're upper deckers now, right? As I stated before, they're all promoted now to lieutenant's junior grade. So I don't know. I think I was pretty satisfied by this. I can't say that I watched any of these and felt disappointed.
No. I think it gives you exactly what you're expecting. It's giving you a bunch of laughs, some fun Star Trek action, and you know, I don't know if you can ask much more of that.
Right. And I mean, now that, like you point out, there's 40 episodes or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, now that it goes into syndication, doesn't matter when you pick it up and watch it, you can just sit down and enjoy an episode and not have to worry about, you know, I mean, there are, like you said, there are some character arcs, but like you can sit down and watch any one of these episodes and have a laugh, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously we've come to really like these characters over the course of time, you know, but I think it's going to be interesting to, you're right, I think in the same way that if they're, you know, not that most people sit down and just watch TV anymore where you watch what's on, but if I sat down and flipped over to Paramount Plus, I would have no issue being like, oh, I just want something light tonight. I'm going to watch, you know, a handful of episodes from season two of Lower Decks. You can't really go wrong.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Now, back to the show.
Cool. I'm going to move on to Loki.
Yes.
Right. So this is what? Science fiction? Name of the episode? Loki season 2, episode 5.
Science/fiction?
Science/fiction.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll go first this time for the elevator pitch. Well, the show may be over, but you can always get the band back together.
Right. The pens. Get the pens back.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very similar in spirit to my Loki gets the gang back together just in the nick of time.
Ooh, I like nick of time. That's good. Good wordplay.
Yeah. Mine was just, you know, origin stories pretty much.
Yeah, it's interesting.
We find out where everybody comes from in this one.
So is that your take on it? Is the idea that this is where they were originally from? Like each one of these people, this is where they were plucked from to become members of the TVA?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that for Ouroboros, his... there might have been a show, maybe in the before time. What do you call it? The recap, right?
Mm.
Where they showed his workshop, and it's all the shelves are all have like a curved wood kind of look to them. And then when he's in his original abandoned missile silo place where he's doing his work, it's the same room, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, but it's like I said last week, it's probably going to be a bunch of time jumps, you know, back and forth and loops. And it was for Loki, like he kept looping, right?
Yep. But involuntarily through this, he kept getting pulled from place to place and meeting everybody over and over again.
By the end of it, he does figure out how to control it, right? That's the difference.
Yep.
Because all season long, he's not been able to control those time slipping.
Yep. It's fun to see, obviously, the ways that they reimagine these characters too, because you get used to who you get used to. Obviously, you know, when we see Mobius in his real life, he's sort of a beleaguered single father to really kind of rambunctious kids. He of course works at the jet ski shop, which we're not surprised to hear. And then, you know, that one, you're like, okay, that's pretty on the nose. And even OB, when you see Ouroboros, and of course he's this, you know, sort of wannabe science fiction writer who's actually a astrophysics teacher, and you're like, okay, well, that checks out. And then you get, you know, Hunter B-15, who's actually a doctor, and you get Casey, who's a criminal trying to escape from 1960s Alcatraz. Yeah. It's funny to sort of, you know, I was like, wow, Casey is different.
he's actually the Birdman from Alcatraz. That was the character that Frank, right? And including the beginning part where that's almost like an Easter egg, the way he pulls the wall apart. That's what the Birdman did. He made a paper mache part of the wall to make it look like great. And then, and the whole escaping through the water tunnel or the water closet, as it's called, or the where all the pipes run in between. That's literally lifted right out of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty funny. Mm-hmm.
And they never did find them, so now we know why, because, you know, Loki came along and took them into the future.
That's it. That's it. Yep. Not the highest level of pew 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 in this one, although I definitely had the moment where we see Sylvie goes into the record shop and she's supposed to be in the 1980s and she's sitting facing away from the front window and she puts on the Velvet Underground's Loaded album, which I will get to very quickly in our Easter eggs, but she puts that on. So, of course, they're playing Oh Sweet Nothing, which is a classic song. And then we see the spaghettification start of her timeline. And as it's creeping through and we see the proprietor running towards her, I thought that was really well done, like really cool effects. And to have that with Oh Sweet Nothing playing, because it's such a perfect song for that. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. That was a pretty awesome scene.
Yeah, I second that one. I was like, I do declare this gentleman has the finest selection of his pew pew pews this week.
Yep. Yeah, I called it the velvet spaghettification. Yeah. Easter egg hunt. So the first one was when Sylvie and Loki go to the bar and they start. Oh, I have to hang on a sec. My dog's going off.
All right, I'm fine. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Carry on. We don't hear them barking.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure they went because they're both going off. Okay. So when Loki and Sylvie are in the bar, he goes and meets her in the timeline. She's the only one who can remember who she is and where she's from. Right. Because, of course, she's been there. This is her choice, right? This is where she wants to be, is back in Oklahoma in Broxton. And she's still working at the McDonald's. And the two of them go to the bar and have a bourbon. And the scene starts with a cut in on the Zaniac video game, and of course Zaniac ties into the larger story we saw earlier on in episode 2 with Brad, the character. Of course, Brad's playing the Zaniac, and so we hear Brad's voice in that scene, which is very, very funny. I'll get to that one in the quotes. And yeah, that was kind of a neat little funny callback that, you know, obviously these aren't the only people on their timelines that obviously people like Brad ended up back on his as well. Oh Sweet Nothing. Okay, so she drops the original vinyl of Velvet Revolver's Loaded on. She puts the needle down and she puts it on track one. That is a huge mistake because that is not track one on that album, which is one of my all-time favorite albums. That is the last song on side two. So screw you, Marvel, because that was so violently wrong. I was just like, no.
Wait, hold on here. But in which branch are we talking about there?
Oh my God.
Double check that.
Oh my God.
Yes. A-sides are B-sides, B-sides are A-sides, up is down, left is right.
That's true. That's true.
If you can still go to McDonald's and get a hot apple pie, then I think you should still be able to listen to one of the all-time classic Velvet Underground albums in the right order.
You know what? At A&W, you can get a hot apple pie.
Like one of those deep fried suckers?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay. There's an A&W not too far. Yeah. Thank you, Tim. That's a good pro tip. I hope you do that here.
All right. Well, class adjourned, and we're out of here. Yeah.
I noticed that last week when I was in the A&W.
Yeah. And the last Easter egg that I had was the post. I don't know if you guys watched all the credits, but at the end of the credits, there was actually a post credit. I mean, we're not going to call it scene, but we hear that same voice from the Zaniac machine. We hear Brad's voice yell "loser," which was very funny. It's just a nice little callback. And I happened to have just left it on, so I caught it. But I saw people posting about that today, saying that this was a thing that for some reason they felt the need to include that in the post credits.
Yeah,
I didn't get this one because Disney Plus. Sometimes, and it's, I guess, not fair to single them out. It's true of every service that somehow hasn't figured out how to program in like chapters or something into their service. You know, they try to push you onto the next thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, 20 seconds to go. It's about to start some random thing that they think you like. It was like, well,
yeah.
I think, oh, okay, cool. I guess it's over. But I didn't hear the stinger and, So I had to like learn about it. And I was like, what? No, I didn't see anything. Oh, okay. So I found a YouTube video. Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And again, it's not like a momentous one. It's just funny. Right. But yeah, that was pretty good. Any other Easter eggs from you fellas?
Nope.
No, I think you covered it. I didn't really mark anything down for these.
Best quote, a couple good ones this week, from Obi. You can't. It's impossible. But don't let that stop you. And then when getting some gobbledygook sci-fi explainy time, Loki just looks at Obi and says, I don't understand what you've just said. That was, the moment I think all of us have had while watching science fiction movies. Been like, that's just gobbledygook that just came out of your head. Why are you putting those words together? Mm-hmm. When we see Mobius outside of his house with his wild and crazy sons, he yells at his one son, Sean, go get him. Come on, hurry. And if you keep him from burning down the house, I'll get you a puppy.
Yeah.
From the video game machine, Zaniac craves blood from Brad. That was just, again, just, apropos of nothing, but it was so stupid and funny. From Sylvie, of course I'm selfish. I want a life. I want to live. What's wrong with wanting something, Loki? That was pretty poignant. Loki, when everybody comes back together, the pens, we have all the pens. And then Loki's sort of final line, it's not about when, where, or why. It's about who. I can rewrite the story. Which throws me right into my big question, which is, how would you rewrite all this? If the idea is that Loki is now going to go back to the TVA, he can control his time slipping. And the idea is he's going to go and he knows the story that we've seen and is going to change it along the way. How do you tie this back to get to the point where things are going to be all right?
No idea. I hadn't thought about it from that angle.
Yeah, I did have that as my big question of like, when, where does Loki go back to? To try to get things in the right order now.
Yeah, I mean, is he going back to season one stuff? Is he going back to just the stuff that we've seen at the TVA this season? You know, is he going back to, you know, anywhere along the timeline? What do you do when you realize that this is the only way forward to go backwards? I wonder, obviously we need to see this next episode, the final episode of this season, and probably the series. I don't see them really having a need to do a third season if this is all sort of tying into the larger Avengers Kang Dynasty and all that other stuff. I think it'll be interesting to see how all this shifts from we need to save the TVA, we need to get all these timelines sorted out, we need to save everybody, and then also how do we set things up for what's supposed to come next? Because it's no, I think, coincidence that the next episode of this is the final episode, and it happens to come out right when the Marvels comes out, and those are the last two Marvel projects this year, and then we're sort of setting ourselves up for the next phase, which is going to include those two new Avengers movies and everything else.
Yeah, I do. I do start to think that some of these shows, not Loki in particular, because I think they had a lot of glue to put here for the larger series, and I have enjoyed these. I'm starting to think that maybe some of these series should be more like one-offs. You know, here's this light, interesting story that can add some things to the broader phase plan. Again, like I don't think you should have to watch Loki to understand what's going on. I think you should enjoy it more, especially if somebody like OB shows up in the background or helps out or something. I think you still need it to have it be people can understand coming into it from through the movies. I think for series, it's like, dude, if you join in season two, like you got to go back and watch season one.
Yeah,
I think that's reasonable. But these are, I think, pretty good because they've, you know, it's easy to forget this is the Loki that escaped, right? This isn't the one who died. This is the one who, when they did all the timey-wimey stuff to get the stones and bring everything back in Endgame, this is the Loki who escaped, and that's why he got picked up as a variant by the TVA in the first place. I think they've done a pretty spot-on job for somebody who is arguably not the same character that we knew from the very beginning.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how they land this. I must admit, I felt like the first two or three episodes they're good, but I don't think they were to the standard that we saw during the first season. But I really have felt like the last couple have been very strong. So I'm hoping they can stick the landing on this one. Because the last episode, if you'll recall, of the first season was just a monster. They just crushed that. So
yeah,
hopefully they have something good for us to wrap all this up next week.
Yeah, hopefully they figured out the spaghettification angle.
I just want them to have to do more scenes like that. It's such a cool effect.
Yeah, it is a pretty neat looking thing. Alrighty, move on to the watch list.
Yup.
Right, how many are up first?
Mine, I have Washington's Dream, which is a brilliant sketch from Saturday Night Live with Nate Bargatze or Bargatze. I forget how his name is pronounced.
Yeah, I think it's Bargatze,
Starring as a Revolutionary War era George Washington, talking about his dream for how if we're brave, one day we'll remove the U from British words like color and armor. But by God, we will keep that U in glamour.
Right.
We'll play a sport called football where you throw a ball with your hands. And when asked, is there kicking? He's like, there's a little kicking. So I thought this might be great given some of the, cultural sharing that we do here between Canada and the United States.
Yeah, some good natured ribbing by our neighbors.
That last week's episode of?
I think it was his most recent weekend, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he's like, is he like Bad Bunny or something like that?
No, that was the week before. Nate Bargatze is a stand-up, really funny stand-up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good solid watch because it does go from, and a few people in the comments called out, it goes from dramatic tone to flat tone, just completely deadpan on some of these things.
Nice.
Especially when Kenan Thompson keeps asking me, like, well, what about the sleigh? It's like, I heard you ask about weights and measures. Yeah. I heard you ask about temperature. You're just completely bypassing the whole what about freedom for the slaves topic.
That's funny.
All right, so looks like Jonathan and I are tag teaming on Gen V.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, final episode dropped on Thursday, so we have all eight, and this was a doozy of an ending.
Oh, I didn't see the eighth one. Is that the one where Homelander shows up?
That's the final one. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler! Just throw it out there for people. Spoilers.
Yeah. No, it's a really interesting, well done. It's the same sort of tone as in a sense as The Boys, but it's much more like high school angst and teenage angst kind of stuff. And
yeah. I mean, it's definitely got that sort of first year of college kind of feel to it. But
There's lots of blood rushing to heads and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought as a whole, it's not as strong as The Boys, but then given the level of performance that we've seen, whether it's Carl Urban or obviously. What's the man who plays Homelander? He's so good. Oh God, it's gonna bug me. But we've been lucky enough to see so many strong performances and so many strong moments in that show that I think elevates it maybe just a little bit beyond this. Anthony Starr, trying to remember, who was just so fantastic. Jack Quaid, of course, and so. We've kind of gotten spoiled by that. This, I thought, a lot of these young performers were really strong. I thought the young woman who played Little Cricket,
was
a very strong. She definitely made an impression on me as, who is this? I've never seen her before, but I really enjoyed her. And but I think overall, the quality of performance was probably what knocks it down just a peg. And it's not as big in its scope, which again is it's hard to match, right? And what's happening on The Boys, but as a companion product, as a sort of another look at that world, there was a little bit of crossover. You mentioned obviously the one cameo that we saw in this one. We saw, and wasn't just the only one. We've seen some other cameos throughout the season, and then in this episode, in the stinger at the end, we definitely get a pretty good cameo. To sort of tease a second season. So they've said, you use this episode to set up what is likely going to be a second season for this. And I don't think I've seen an announcement, but I would expect we will at some point, obviously, given the actor's strike and stuff, they don't necessarily rush out the door with that kind of stuff. But it, I thought it was overall like an entertaining watch. I would definitely watch a second season of this.
Yeah. The young guy who plays Sam, the one character with all the major angst, he was really good, I thought.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of there. So I think it's, it's funny as I looked this up last week. So Lizzie Broadway is the young woman who plays Emma, who is Little Cricket.
Right.
Jazz Sinclair plays Marie Moreau. She's very good. I thought the across the board, they were really good, but the one that it caught me off guard, I didn't realize, Luke, the golden boy character, was played by Patrick Schwarzenegger, Arnold Schwarzenegger's kid.
Did not realize that that was a Schwarzenegger. Does not look as much like his dad as he does like his mom. But yeah, interesting.
Right, lucky guy.
Yeah. And Sam, the character you mentioned, that's Asa German. I think across the board, it was an entertaining show and definitely worth a look if you're a fan of the world.
Yeah, and I saw the one actress who plays the other blood.
She was from The Boys, right?
Blood Wrangler. Yeah, I saw her on the street because they were filming a scene here.
Mm.
Yeah, for an upcoming season of The Boys. There's a house on our street or on Langley that they use as one of the houses in the show. Yeah,
I think it's Claudia Dumit.
And she's walking back and forth in a 70s power suit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Head suit.
Nice. Yeah, I think I mentioned in the previous episode, but obviously this episode takes place, a lot of it is outdoors, and it's on the campus of Mississauga, campus of University of Toronto. That's like...
Oh, is that U of T?
UTM. It's University of Toronto's Mississauga campus. You could, like, it's comedic how much it's not even, like, for me, it's not hidden at all.
Yeah.
And that's like 4K from my house.
I've never been there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think that campus existed when I was going to go to U of T. Oh, no, maybe it did. Yeah, it's up on Mississauga Road, right?
Yep, it's Mississauga Road right at Dundas. Yeah.
Yeah, north of Mississauga. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I have been there. Yeah, I used to have a friend who lived across the street.
Yep.
Cool. And what's your other pick there, John?
My other pick, yeah. So today is the debut of the second season of Invincible. So speaking of Amazon, they seem to be on a little bit of a run here with some decent product. Second season drops today. We did obviously get the sort of tweener episode that focused on Adam Eve character that came out around Comic-Con this summer. But here we actually get to pick up where we left off, which is, of course, the huge fight that ended last season between Omni-Man and Invincible, or Mark and his dad. It'll be interesting to see for people who haven't read the comic, which obviously I'm a long time reader. I've read it since the beginning. So, but it's still amazing to see how they're bringing it to a cartoon form and these great voice performances and this great animation. But it'll be interesting to see how people react to Mark and the world sort of picking up the pieces after what is essentially the Superman character of this, Omni-Man, going berserk, you know, killing people and beating his own son to within an inch of his life. How do you come back from that, right? And that's sort of the crux of what we're going to see in season two is how does Mark pick up the pieces? How does his family pick up the pieces? How does Earth pick up the pieces when its greatest hero turns its back on the planet, right? And I took a look today to sort of see how they were going to do this. Often Amazon will drop sort of 2-3 episodes to sort of get you kicked off, and then we'll see more sort of trickle out after that. But today they dropped one episode, so we're going to get them week by week, and we're going to get them a nice slow trickle. So I imagine that is probably a different take based on the fact that they don't have as much content given the writer's strike and everything else. So. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this comes together.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that too, because I knew they were going to do 4 and then do a break, I think we had talked about.
Yep.
So I was like, well, are they going to drop all of them and then have a break? Nope, they're going to stretch it out.
Yep, you're going to get your four episodes in 4 weeks, and then you're going to get a break, and then in early 2024, you'll get the next 4.
Cool. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, Jonathan, if people would get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Twitter or X and Instagram as @JPKNews, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK, or I might be on the floor of my office here passed out from being sick.
Right. And I mean, if people would get in touch with you, where they find you?
I'm on Twitter as @DevWithAHair.
All right. My name is Timitra, TIMMITRA on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, the Blue Sky Machine, Instagram Machine, all those places where you'll find me. And so next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag #AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
To Mississauga campus there? To the woods? Is your firstborn going to the woods?
No. He's going to Humber, which is up by the airport.
Gosh, right.
Yeah. Yep. And even if he's starting out with the college program, and then he's going to sort of see how he does there and whether or not he wants mm-hmm. to continue his education, because there are like the continuum. You cannot go from one to the other. So to explain that, Jaime, our college and university system is different here in Canada. The college system is more like what they would call a community college in America. And then university here would be more of like the larger scale colleges.
What they call college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's essentially doing the more accessible, grounded level, sort of hands-on learning, applied to technology kind of stuff in the program he's doing. And then if he decides he wants to do something beyond that, he'll go to the next level, once he finishes this program. But, he's doing quite well. He just finished his midterms and got really good grades and, seems to be enjoying himself. He's doing extracurricular stuff, trying to, you know, get out there and learn even more. And yeah, it's kind of fun.
Cool.
Fun to watch your kids fly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Sri Bob. Well, I lost a whole 6 hours worth of work today, so I have a lot of catching up to do tonight.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't have a lot left in me, so maybe pull the plug on this one sooner than later.
Sure. Somebody asked me the other day if I'm going to go see the Marvels movie. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, it comes out next Thursday.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyway.
Probably eventually.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
See you later.
Have a good weekend, guys.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.